Recorded live in a strangely still downtown Newtown, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Welcome along, everyone, to Season 3, Episode 1 of Rancho Notorious. Yes, we are three, and that's about the level of maturity that you'll probably get in today's show as well.
There were some thumbs up being thrown around for our listeners who don't have visuals.
It's Rancho Notorious toddler time. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in Wellington, New Zealand, is Kaylee Carruthers.
Hello.
Very pleasurable to have you here. And joining us at Rancho Notorious tonight, we have Rebecca Goodby here from one of Kiwi Cinema's most... I was going to say, like, the royal family of New Zealand cinema, but I thought they might be pushing it a little bit.
They are listeners, though, so
you're making me feel old.
I know.
You're like a baby George.
The intention was to make you feel important.
I am important.
And
thank
venerated. So, Rebecca, you are not just the daughter of one of the great cinema owners of New Zealand, retired now, but you are also one of the long-standing, most long-standing and literally standing supporters of the New Zealand International Film Festival in Wellington. Can you describe your role with the New Zealand International Film Festival, just to give people an idea of the context in which you inhabit?
I think we would roll with Usher extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. 15
Queen
years
Usher.
And counting.
15 years.
In Wellington, not counting the years I've worked for my dad in Napier. So, yeah, that makes me sound really old.
You don't look it.
Yeah, hey, I am that friendly face that shows people to their seats. And I'm also the one that comes under the torchlight when the lights go out and something's gone wrong. And I say, it's all under control. In the meantime, you can see the projectionist freaking out up the back, but it's fine.
It's an extremely important role, isn't it? Because you are essentially, you know, custodian of public safety.
This is true.
You know, very important.
Fire warden.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly. So if you've ever been to a film at the New Zealand International Film Festival in Wellington, chances are you have been shown to your seat by Rebecca. So, I mean, what better person to have here on a day when yet another round of announcements for this year's festival have been made? We'll be talking about those a little bit later on, won't we? But you're here in another role, unofficial. Must stress that. Because you are also, your job title, you told me earlier on, advisor, civil defence, brackets, at the New Zealand Ministry of Health.
Hey, that was a good try, but it was actually advisor, Ministry of Health, emergency management.
Emergency management.
Yeah.
See, I should have written it down, shouldn't I? It was like I came from one room to the next. Shows you it's been one of those days.
It's okay. We work very closely with civil defence, and that's an important key right here.
Yeah. So emergency management for the Ministry of Health. So that means that when things like bird flu are threatened, foot and mouth, those sorts of things, the whole of the Ministry of Health looks to you for advice, because that's what it says in advisor. You are the provider of advice.
You know what? That's a terrifying thought, but it's almost true. Yeah. Yes, I am an advisor on all things pandemic and natural disaster related.
Fantastic. And so we thought it would be a fantastic thing to have you here to help us. You can combine your film appreciation with your professional life and help us review Dwayne Johnson's San Andreas, which is currently playing in New Zealand cinemas. And we do need to make it absolutely clear that all opinions that you might express in this room are not those of the New Zealand government, the Ministry of Health, the Minister of Health, the Prime Minister, FIFA, anybody else who may think they have a stake in you at the moment. This is you're off the clock. So this is you in your enthusiastic, unprofessional capacity, giving us the benefit of your experience, your advice as an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
We are blessed.
As they say.
Indeed. We should get into it, shouldn't we? Now, we are also going to be talking about, in addition to San Andreas, Aloha, starring Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone, Rachel McAdams, and also, we alluded to this earlier on, the local content of this year's New Zealand International Film Festival was announced, and the Sydney Film Festival is also hitting its stride this week. So lots to talk about, but before we go any further, Kaylee, you have been scrolling the mailbag.
Yes, I have, as I do every week, and sometimes during the week, you know, I'll take my little Twitter breaks.
Sometimes I get a little... a notification that we have retweeted something and I didn't do it. And so I presume that that must have been you.
It's me or it's the ghost of Rancho Notorious, but it's probably me. Let's start with Claire Cray over in Vancouver. Fab last episode of season 2. Now want to see Fury Road a second time. Ready to pledge for season 3. # Rancho on the Road.
And I have to say that that was the most enthusiastic response to that particular suggestion. In fact, I would go so far as to say that was the only response to that particular suggestion. So we're going to put that out there again. There's the possibility, with festivals coming up, we could take Rancho Notorious on the road to public screenings as part of the New Zealand International Film Festival, maybe, or to your home if you would like us to come and visit you. So... have a listen to the closing minutes of the last episode. That's 2/18 for more information, because we're thinking about what we do with our executive producers, you know, bearing in mind that we also owe them a T-shirt, probably.
We're working still on it.
Yeah, which we're definitely. We got so far last week as to narrow down suppliers.
Yes.
Yeah.
The lovely Rudy Stark has tweeted us a whole bunch of stuff updating us on his life, because we haven't heard from him in a while.
Oh, no, I have.
Oh, you have. I haven't. Sorry, I've been out of the loop. But he's coming on the show, isn't he?
Yep, we're going to be doing a Rudy special.
Yes, long-time listener, though.
Yep.
He's been with us for a while. Hmm. Hey, guys, catching up with the last two episodes of Rancho Podcast. Sugar, I can now answer about, because I'm in dentistry.
He is, yeah.
That's where he's been, at dentistry school.
Yeah, maybe not actual dentistry. I don't think he's a put his hand in your mouth kind of guy. He's selling dentistry supplies. But that's the industry
still
that he's working in.
Yeah,
I know, totally cool. Which means he gets to come to Wellington to for his job, which means he's going to come and appear on the show.
And also, we always love these reminders of how to pronounce foreign names. I remember now Rancho Podcast, Alfonso Cuarón sounds for you English speakers like Cuarón. Got it?
Yeah, thanks for that.
Cool.
Clearing that up.
Yes. Oh, what else? There's so much.
Yeah, this is what happens when we have 2 weeks.
I know. Siobhan tweeted, watching Chef's Table by David Gelb, Giro Dreams of Sushi fame, on Netflix. Two-word review, divine deliciousness.
We have been getting a lot of two-word reviews sent to us on Twitter, and for things that, people are just two-word reviewing, not just what's in the cinemas, but what they're watching on TV, what they're watching at home.
Mm.
Good. Good
great
tips. Follow us on Twitter to get these gems.
Mm, mm. Fred Thompson, of course, couldn't have a Twitter mailbag without at least a couple two-word reviews. Two-word review for Entourage, because we're not reviewing it this week. Fan service. Watching a group of white entitled jerks being idiots gets tiresome real quick for show fans.
Yep. Did anybody, any hands up anybody in the room who saw that? I was going to try and get to it this week, but time ran out, unfortunately. But yeah, and are you familiar with the TV show?
I'm familiar. I'm not really a fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll do.
I'm going to skip Fred. I'm going to skip your two-word review of Aloha because it's just spoiling what I'm going to say. two-word review for Tangerines, plural.
Right.
Futile benevolence. Stark, realistic look at conflicting ideologies. Slow, methodical, but so riveting. And one more, sneaking in, from Simon. Now, please tell me if I'm pronouncing your last name right. Bunkenberg. Two-word review, Dead Ringers, Twisted Dependence. Loved the free screening at City Gallery Wellington, which prompted a follow-up tweet of City Gallery Wellington tweeting a link to all of their June screenings that they're having.
Yeah, so can you read them out? Or just maybe some highlights?
Yes, I can.
Because they don't have movies every day. It's not like a cinema.
No, but they do Sunday screenings. Yeah, they do Sunday screenings. So this past Sunday was Dead Ringers. Coming up this Sunday is Adaptation.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
True story. Sunday the 21st of June, Village of the Damned. So great. And on Sunday 28th of June, The Brood. So these are all at 1 p.m. They're free screenings at City Gallery Wellington. If you haven't been to their awesome little theaterette, it is there. You can, you know, find your favorite seat for these screenings and for upcoming NZIF.
And then you can wander around the gallery and enjoy the rest of the art.
Exactly, because there's quite a few video installations there at the moment. So there you go, media.
Talking of non-traditional theatre cinema spaces, Ngā Taonga, the former New Zealand Film Archive, have a week of Utu Redux playing on their big screen at
and
the
also
moment.
Their 80s movies.
Mm.
There's a lot happening.
It is.
It's great. It's a great time to be in Wellington.
I have to say that the Ngā Taonga programming is random, it seems to me. It just seems like they just... You have to pay attention to what they're doing. You can't trust that there's going to be any kind of structure to it, but it's all
good.
But
maybe because now they have DCP, it's opened up a lot of doors for them.
Yeah, the last thing I saw there was a 35mm presentation of Terry Gilliam's Brazil from their own archive.
I've only ever watched that on a bus. I should really do it justice.
Oh, my God. Well, actually, funnily enough, I have the Criterion of Brazil here, so we should have you over.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah,
that'd be great. I can bring over some of my $10 Blu-ray finds, one of which is Magic Mike. Thank you very much. Thank you, $10 Blu-rays at the warehouse.
Oh my God.
I can now add that to my.
It's pretty much the only place that I buy Blu-rays now. Actually,
we are not sponsored by the warehouse, but I'm just telling you, people, $10 Blu-rays.
$10 Blu-ray, the best Babe Pig in the City.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Oh, and one thing that Ian, who's in the other room, asked me to, asked if I had told you, we now have 3D working at home in our little home cinema.
Really?
Yeah. So we bought Jurassic Park 3D, cheap Blu-ray, and Sin City 3D, and it is so exciting.
At home. 3D at home.
3D at home.
Do you have to be sitting beside each other?
What? Don't you only have two pairs of glasses?
No, we have four pairs of glasses.
We can both go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We'll organise our social calendar.
Yeah.
Offline. But anyway, very excited about all of that. And
so if you want to come over, you know, listeners, we can organise some 3D screenings. You might have to buy your own glasses.
Yeah, that's right. And,
sorry.
Or you might have to be an executive producer of the show. But it's time to find out what the world has been watching.
Oh, yes.
We have we'll start with the New Zealand box office.
Yes. See, I don't... Okay. Just to be nitpicky about the fonts, because we can't go without talking about it. Why is it... No, it's not in Comic Sans anymore. But why is it in italics and underlined? That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah,
for years, the Comic Sans has really grated me.
It literally changed this year.
Well, I'm impressed. Because my father used to... Look at this. Why is it in Comic Sans? I cannot take that seriously.
I can't. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Yeah. Opening at 5, Aloha.
And Aloha has a little 2 in brackets there, which means that there's apparently unreported previews and Pacific Islands revenue. So looks like they snuck that one out into... Because we know that Rarotonga has a cinema. Because, you know, we've been talking about that on the show. So, presumably, because Aloha, Pacific-themed, etc., they tried to score a few bucks out of the Pacific before they opened it anywhere else.
There you go. In at 4, up from 5, Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Hands up, who's seen that one?
Not that I haven't. I'm just... I have to make my decisions wisely. I did not choose wisely this week.
There was so much potential in this film. So much potential.
What's the potential? It's based on a Disneyland park. Is there potential?
Yes, there is, because you would never know. Like, if I've never been to Disneyland, I didn't even know there was a Tomorrowland.
That's what we need to fundraise for.
Right. But this is a film that had the potential for so many wonderful messages for young people. It had the potential to be the great optimistic film we could all get behind and feel really good about ourselves and humanity and human nature and all those sorts of things that, you know, that we really need, because everything has been so cynical about human beings and our motivations and all the rest of it. And it sort of gets like halfway there and then it loses its nerve and becomes a traditional Hollywood picture where problems are solved by people punching each other. And this could have been a great film about how science and technology and innovation and creativity and youthful optimism might be the thing that gets human beings out of the jam that we're in, and it sort of knocks on the door of that and then runs away. And it's just a big disappointment.
So and is your two-word review like Nikki Nine Doors?
Yeah, you can use that. But here's the thing. It's not often that I actually come out of a film feeling quite angry, but that was one where I felt, I really wanted to be able to go back to see it a second time with Sebastian, the 12-year-old, because it would have been had the potential to be a fantastic message thing for him. But now I don't. Yeah, no. Mm. So yeah, big disappointment, and it's cost Disney, like, they're already announcing a loss of about $130 million on it. And so Clooney's magic touch appears to have disappeared. So, you know, the film commission will be able to afford him soon.
Maybe.
Yeah.
In at number 3, down from 2, Mad Max Fury Road. In at number 2, up from 3, is Spy.
Now, Spy, yeah, that's an interesting little switch. We talked about Spy last week, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And I rate it really highly. It's doing great business. And Mad Max is also a fantastically well-reviewed and well-regarded film, but not quite holding its own then.
And in the number one position, Sam Andreas.
Sam Andreas, right. And what's happening across the ditch? Number 5, Aloha. Well, that's strikingly similar. Tomorrowland dropped from 2 to 6 in Australia. So, yeah, definitely not doing the business there. Mad Max Fury Road at 4, Spy at 3, San Andreas at 2, and Entourage. Did Entourage make it into the New Zealand one?
6.
Yes, at 6. So there you go. Entourage, obviously a bigger brand in Australia than in New Zealand.
Hmm. Over in North America, we have Mad Max Fury Road in 5, number 4, Entourage, 3, Insidious Chapter 3, which I'd be surprised if it doesn't get a release here. In at number 2...
Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you for a little bit, because Insidious Chapter 3, the amusing aspect of this film is they're calling it Chapter 3, but it's actually a prequel to the previous two. So why didn't they just call it Chapter Minus 1 and... Be done with it. So I thought
or given it like an actual title.
Or given it an actual title, exactly. But I had a little look at the IMDb page to confirm that. And scrolling down the credits, there's a character called the Man Who Can't Breathe.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular. In at number 2, San Andreas, and in the number 1 position is Spy. And of course, to get our iTunes tags in on the IMDb Movie Meter this week, number 1, Game of Thrones.
Exactly. We can now say that we talked about Game of Thrones.
Mm. We did talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Although we haven't started season 5 here at this house yet. We're waiting for it all to finish, mm-hmm. and then we'll binge watch it later on. So UK, the weekend of the 5th to the 7th of June, weird. Look at this. The Empire Strikes Back, Secret Cinema 2015, is at number 8. I don't know what that means.
Oh, Secret Cinema's great.
What's that? Explain it to me.
Oh, Secret Cinema is a series of screenings. You sign up to become a member, and they send you, like, seedy-sounding emails that tell you just to show up at this time, go to the screening. And then I think it's sort of like going to Telluride, but just for one film. Right. And, like, I think the day beforehand they tell you what it is.
Yeah, and they still take your money as well.
Apparently. Oh, totally.
Yeah. Okay, so Empire Strikes Back, that's done some serious coin, actually. Number 8, 7 Tomorrowland, which in England, or England, listen to me, it's like I'm in Mad Men. in the UK, it's called Tomorrowland, A World Beyond. Like, that's helpful. Age of Ultron is at number 6, Pitch Perfect 2 at 5, Mad Max 4, Insidious Chapter 3 at 3, Sam Andreas at 2, and number 1, Spy. So that's what's happening in the old country. So it's time to actually talk about San Andreas, so we'll hear a little bit of it.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you I was sorry for how I acted yesterday.
No, Ray, really.
No, Emma. Oh,
my God.
This whole chunk of land will be decimated.
Are you saying the whole San Andreas fault might go off?
Everybody down!
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
We are going now! I've been
saving more. The Rock. We still call him The Rock, don't we?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your notes.
Whenever I come to the Rancho Notorious, like, studio, I always think, like, oh, he has family in Newtown, doesn't he? Like, doesn't his aunt live in Newtown? And that's, like, the whole New Zealand connection.
Yeah, he went to school in Grey Lynn in Auckland. And yeah.
Can you imagine if you just, I'm, like, strolling down the street? I would lose it.
That would be the greatest.
That'd be great. I'd be like, can you please just, like, hug me and, like, pick me up and spin me around and then put me down?
You're thinking of Channing Tatum now, though, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking of The Rock.
Oh, right.
He's such a babe.
He's charming, isn't he? There's a relaxed sort of. I mean, he's.
But I don't know why he's not in Magic Mike. Like, that's. He should be. Anyway.
Yeah, but he's a family entertainer, you see. And this is the. He's not going to sully that brand. He's done children's films. Do you remember that one where he became the fairy?
Yes.
The tooth fairy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so no, he's got a whole sort of family entertainment vibe thing going on, which he is not until he's a little bit older, maybe, is he going to change that. So, and actually San Andreas fits squarely in that sort of heroic family entertainment bracket. It's not a kids movie as such, but it's not unfriendly to kids. You know, we took a 12-year-old to it and he really enjoyed it. And so who's going to give us the rundown of the plot?
I will, because I found this and it just sounds great. A seemingly ideal day turns disastrous when California's notorious San Andreas Fault triggers a devastating magnitude 9 earthquake, the largest in recorded history. As the earth cracks open and buildings start to crumble, Ray Gaines, Dwayne Johnson, and LAFD search and rescue helicopter and LFA sergeant blah blah.
He's a fireman.
He's a pilot. Must navigate
an Iraq war veteran.
Good point.
Obviously. Must navigate the destruction from Los Angeles to San Francisco to bring his estranged wife and their only daughter to safety.
Yeah. And so, but the film opens with him doing some insane flying into a canyon to drag a
woman who falls down a cliff in her car and survives, still looking great.
Yeah.
Phone doesn't go missing.
No.
And her phone doesn't go missing.
Her phone does not.
Exactly. Miss. Well, yeah. I mean, it was very close to hand because that was the reason why she drove off the cliff in the first place.
Oh, wasn't that stressing? Taylor Swift's playing. Is she going to go side the cliff? Is it the Rumma Tuckers? I don't know what's happening. It was stressful from minute go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Edge of your seat stuff. But, you know, I personally, I would have gone, were you using your phone? Were you using your phone? Yes. See ya.
Hey, they risked that helicopter. They risked it. And they got through it.
They did. They risked the helicopter. They nearly tore the arm off his mate who was down, trapped underneath it.
But The Rock, that guy, sorry.
Yeah.
Dwayne.
it should be The Rock. Dwayne's a terrible name. I'm sorry.
He saved the day.
He did.
And that doesn't give away any plot points.
No, that just gets you into it. Well, actually, it sort of does, because he does wreck the motor of the helicopter doing this thing, so it has to go in for repairs. And then when all of the heck goes down seismically, his helicopter isn't quite up to the job of actually getting him where he needs to go. So yeah, like it sowed a few seeds there. His own troubles. He caused his own troubles.
I assumed he was in another chopper.
No, he was taking it.
Do you not? They've only got one.
There was a couple sitting behind us talking really loudly. I was a bit distracted.
They were excited.
Don't get me started.
Plot, okay.
No, they were talking loudly because one kept going to the bathroom and coming back and asking what was happening.
And sniffing.
And, anyway.
So Paul Giamatti works for Caltech.
Yes.
And he's he's our hero geologist. And he's some of his sensors that he's planted around California are beeping madly, including some in Nevada, right? So he and his protege head to the Hoover Dam.
I think this is
like minute 7 or something, isn't it? We're not very far into
it's
this
pretty
film.
Great.
There's a lot happening.
Yeah, to the Hoover Dam. The sensors start pinging rapidly, and the first of the earthquake strikes. The Hoover Dam's gone burger, and so is his mate. All right. So again, we're not in spoiler territory. We're only at 10 minutes. Seriously, if you know. We're not spoiling anything at this point. Yeah, there's an earthquake. I think that's probably... You've got grasped that at this point. Anyway, so... but I was thinking, wow, that's a big place to start, isn't it?
Mm.
The Hoover Dam.
Mm.
And now, how likely is it that the Hoover Dam could even be taken out? Like, so it sort of starts to raise the question of, if I was an engineer... or an architect, I'd be pretty offended by this film. Because it basically says, you can't build shit. None of you. It doesn't make 9.1 or 9.5 doesn't make any difference.
No, it's the power of Mother Nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Right. Is that a lesson, or is that like a real thing?
Who knows? You know, Mother Nature will always win. That's all I'm saying.
Wow.
Tag hash, as they say.
And coming from an emergency management professional, that's really not reassuring.
But speaking of professionals,
yep.
You should see the research that's in front of us. This is incredible.
There's an entire lunch hour gone into this.
Yeah, yes.
Wow. Okay, no. How much more plot do we need? Apparently... this first massive quake in Nevada, which takes out, I mean, the Hoover Dam, right? All the water behind it, it's going to completely do over most of Las Vegas and all the rest of it. I mean,
but they cut away pretty quickly. Like, no one cares. No one cares about Nevada.
No, in fact, no one cares about Nevada. In fact, he's basically, 2 hours flying time away, but he gets a text. He doesn't have to go till the next day. He's like we've seen what he can do in the previous thing. It's like, surely emergency management professionals would be going, get those choppers in the air, get over there, don't have a night's sleep, don't take your kids to college, you know, get stuck in. There are people like what? I don't get it. I don't know.
This is a good time to turn to our emergency management. Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. Quote unquote
expert.
Explain it to us.
Well, I think the one thing that you're neglecting here is Nevada, Hoover Dam falls apart, earthquake. First question, are the Transformers okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point. Actually, that did cross my mind.
Because this time last year, I was in a helicopter flying over the Hoover Dam, and that was my first question. The helicopter pilot was like, is it true that Transformers live down there? To which he said, I cannot confirm nor deny, and we carried on. So I choose to believe that there are Transformers in the Hoover Dam, and that earthquake...
Well, what were they doing? They're supposed to be our friend.
They should be helping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't show up this time.
What do you want me to say? I mean, this was like one of the greatest disaster movies I've seen in a very long time. And it is a big hit in the emergency management community right now.
Is that right?
Yeah. My team is going on a field trip to see it next week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
On your message boards. You've been swapping, you know.
No, my boss, big shout out to him. I'm sure he'll be listening. He's very excited. And we're going on a field trip to go and see it.
Yeah?
Yeah. There were lots of like nice little contrasts in the film that were very realistic to what is important to us, being prepared for an earthquake in this country.
Mm.
And while it was full of scientific flaws, like horrific flaws, this film still showed the devastation that you can get from an earthquake and gave us some very important life lessons.
Like what?
Like, drop, cover, hold.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Right. So desks, under desks more important than under...
Yeah, right there. Okay. Visual aid. Nobody else can see it, but this is visual aid.
No, thanks for that. You've got three of those. You can leave some behind. Some leave behinds.
Even better, I can send you the website.
Great. No, that's fantastic because, you know, obviously New Zealanders are, at least for New Zealanders that don't live in Auckland and aren't already over it, you know, but there are lots of New Zealanders who are very conscious of what's been going on in Christchurch over the last few years and that even a city with relatively low-rise buildings, you know, the risks, just the risks of chimneys, you know, in a residential area, people are now really aware of all of those. Do you think that there's a danger that a film like this is likely to traumatise people who've been through that or re-traumatise people who've been through that experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that a lot of people would sit down and watch this and it would scare the crap out of them because it would bring back a lot of memories of being trapped in that whole Christchurch situation, which wasn't pleasant for anybody. And for me, my grandmother was through the 1931 earthquake and I used to laugh at her when she used to freak out at earthquakes. It wasn't until Christchurch so I went, oh, I get it now. Sorry, Nana. But she was long gone by that point, so I could never really apologise for that. But at the same time, without sounding too serious about this whole St. Andreas thing, when you take a step back, it is so highly entertaining about its ridiculousness, like the tsunami that comes in, which is higher than the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, that's insane. That will never, ever, ever happen. Yet it is so amazing.
Mm.
And then you've, you know... When the
container ship flips over...
And it's a container ship from Canada... Come on.
But hold on. We all in Wellington know the power of loose containers.
Oh, good point.
Don't
tropical.
We? Yeah, right there. Exactly. Because, yes. You know, high winds will blow those things off the wharf.
Hey, at least we all learned from the arena, they still float. That is a thing.
Well, and those of us that saw the Robert Redford yachting movie, All Is Lost, we know that they float. Even when they've got holes in them, they still float.
And this is in the trailer, so not a spoiler. But, Rebecca, do you know, is it a good idea to drive a motorboat up a tsunami? Is that recommended?
I think you'll find official advice advises you to go to higher ground. And in no circumstances to go near the tsunami. That is best practice advice.
Yeah.
But given that different for that guy.
He was right on the wharf. He was never going to get anywhere.
It's true.
All the hills were on
fire.
Post
AT&T sponsorship, he was away.
Yeah.
So
you know, given the fact that you know, Plan A isn't really applicable.
Mm-hmm.
Plan B, and you're the Rock.
Why not ride the wave? You know, it made for an awesome scene. You got to go, and you know, it made me feel happy. I actually cheered and stood up a little, just briefly, in the cinema. My friend was horrified, but it was one of the greatest movie-going experiences since Contagion for me. I was really happy.
Oh, in terms of your professional...
Yes. Contagion, I do recall somebody sneezing behind me and then someone screaming, ah, they got me! And I, without any thought, got... hand sanitizer on my bag and put it on. Like, it was just an automatic thing for me. So
beautiful.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself.
How familiar are you with the golden age of disaster movies, which was the 1970s, when, like, there was an... Do you remember, you may not remember, but there was an earthquake, a movie called Earthquake.
There
with,
was.
With Charlton Heston and George... Thingy Bob, George Stevens, I think his name is. And
George Thingy Bob,
right? And they installed this thing in the cinemas called Sensorround, which rocked your seats so that you got the full thing, you know, the full experience. And then, of course, the Poseidon Adventure, where the boat flips over, the original with Shelley Winters, you know, fantastic film. But my favourite is The Towering Inferno, which terrified me, and it still lurks in my subconscious to this day. But the difference between those films and this one is that those films had this massive cast of characters. It was like a soap opera with lots of little threads of stories to follow. This one's very focused on Dwayne and his divorce, and his daughter, and his daughter's new boyfriend, and his daughter's new boyfriend's brother from Game of Thrones. So
what?
Yeah, he's the Stark boy who can't walk in Game of Thrones.
I don't watch that.
That's where I recognize it. Yeah. No, is it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Fun facts, people. Fun
looking
facts.
This up.
Yeah. So, I've wanted a big disaster movie with a big cast and lots of fading stars. Like, Towering Inferno had Fred Astaire in it. You know, there was a lot of fun to be gotten in those days from just seeing who turns up in them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this film, it seemed to me its ambitions were slightly muted in terms of the fun that they could have had with lots of different characters.
No, he's not Bran, he's Rickton, he's the other brother.
The other brother.
He's the other brother.
I'm pleased we cleared that up.
Yeah, it's like, that is not Bran.
He did the floppy hair, like, don't they all have the same floppy hair? I don't know.
Yeah, and they've been missing for like 2 seasons, so who knows? Anyway.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good stuff. Game of Thrones, anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Back to disaster movies.
So, were there enough characters, and were the characters that were in it engaging enough? Kylie Minogue turns up for 30 seconds.
What was that? It actually threw me so much that I leaned over to my friend. What's with the... Because she had the accent, and it's like, you know...
I'm amazed she could move her mouth at all.
What was happening? What was happening? I don't understand what her purpose was. Does anybody know why she got a role in the first place? Is she that desperate for money?
Maybe they saw Holy Motors, and like, you know what was great? That scene in Holy Motors where Kylie Minogue sang a song and then, like, jumped off that, you know, building.
That was great. My ninth birthday when I got a Kylie Minogue tape. That was the last time Kylie was amazing, actually.
But, you know, I think we could take this into, like, a new tagline. It's like, emergency management, don't be a Kylie.
Yeah.
We won't go into it, but it's beautiful.
But, there were actually lots of... counterexamples of you know, optimum good behavior in that, like, don't just open a door and run through it because there might not be a floor on the other side.
You make a good point.
Yeah,
and this is where Drop Cover Cold comes back into place.
Yes,
visual aid. Yeah,
visual aid.
So even if the swimming pool above you is basically falling on top of you, to stay under your restaurant table and trust that the chandelier's not going to, you know.
Hey, this is the point where I tell you that when The Rock screams, "Triangle of Life," that is not correct practice. Do not run and hide under Triangle of Life in an outdoor building against a supporting wall on an outside building, because it will likely kill you. It's not actually the best practice.
Right.
Yeah, being yelled at to drop, cover, hold. Now, that's a great idea. Get under your desk.
Right. But being related to The Rock, however, is best practice.
That is.
Yeah. I would think that if you can wangle that in any kind of an emergency, you will be fine.
Have you not thought through why he was not a... There's the greatest national disaster of all time in the United States, right? However... Instead of doing my job, I'm going to take this aircraft that belongs to the city, fly to another city.
Yeah.
Screw you guys, I'm off.
Yep.
How's that okay?
I haven't really thought much about this.
Yeah,
to be honest,
it bothered me greatly.
There's an enormous amount of, I wouldn't call it dereliction of duty, but there certainly seems to be a lack of sense of purpose about it. Because even at the very end, when the cleanup is, like, you know, obviously the last of the tremors have finished and the family's reunited. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to pretend that that's not going to happen. and then we sort of Paul Giamatti and the rest of his, because evidently Caltech is impregnable.
Good to know,
right? That and all of his stuff, they've picked up all of the flat screen TVs that fell off the wall in an earlier scene, put them back on the wall, and now they're watching all of the television channels again. And there's this shot of the White House, and it says White House shaken. And this caption below is like, they better be a bit more than bloody shaken, I would have thought. I think they would have thought, this is like the 10th, it was California, the 10th biggest economy in the world.
Oh, look, it's probably fine. It's probably fine,
well,
as they
and
say.
Actually, well, I've even answered my own question, because as we know, there's nothing quite like an earthquake for an economy. You know, a rebuild. Rebuild California, insurance, fantastic. You know, jobs for everybody. Yeah.
We will.
We will rebuild. And they, did he salute at that point?
There was a flag.
Yeah, yeah. There was a big flag. I tell you what, you wouldn't have got me out on that bridge to hang that bloody flag. Tell you.
You know, I'm just glad that, like, despite the fact that there was only a handful of survivors, they had that flag ready. They had that flag ready for America. Yeah,
but all people who are with their nation will always have a spare flag up their sleeve.
A giant ass flag. Sorry for the spoilers. Mm. It's probably the most amazing
moment
of the film.
You've ruined it right there. You've ruined it for everyone.
Yeah. All right.
It was beautiful, though. It was beautiful. There were tears in my eyes of laughter.
Should we try and sum this up? I'm conscious of
talking about amazing, greatest disaster movies of all time.
Yeah. No, true. True, we could go on if you want. But we should probably try and sum this up in two words, because that is what we do here.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking at me?
I'm looking at anybody but me, because I'm
okay.
Still
my
struggling.
Two words for San Andreas are America, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is hard.
All right, well, I'll do mine while you're thinking. Okay, my two words for San Andreas are rock rocked.
Best disaster, full stop.
Ooh, nice.
Hey,
yeah.
One little plug though.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand Shakeout, 9:15 a.m., 15 October 2015. It's all about a national earthquake exercise.
Yeah.
If you want to know more, The Rock is sponsoring FEMA, and he is giving a little YouTube shout out.
Which we will put in the notes.
We are so going to put that in the notes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's fantastic and optimal timing for that. Thank you very much for all of your experience. I hope that you'll be continuing to feed into the rest of the program. Don't feel like your job here is done by any means.
Oh, it's not done. I assure you.
All right. Time for the news.
Yes. So let's start with the NZIF rundown from today's announcement.
It was huge. You don't feel like you have to do it all.
I've been doing it all day. Oh my God. For those of you just tuning in, I work for NZIF, so I know a bit. I know a bit of what's going on.
Acronym phobes. That is the New Zealand International Film Festival.
Yes. And today the New Zealand International Film Festival and myself announced the collection of New Zealand films that will be screening at the festival this year. Now, this is not all the New Zealand films. There may or may not be more. But a fantastic list nonetheless, which joins the New Zealand's best finalists, which were announced. So a couple highlights that I want to point out and, you know, let people know about is Belief, The Possession of Janet Moses. It's an incredible doco. It's been made very sensitively about Janet Moses, who passed away during an attempted exorcism in Wainuiomata. So,
really?
Yes, it made international headlines in 2007. It was a very tragic story. And it's an incredible documentary. I highly recommend seeing it to people. And I think there might be some info on it in the Dominion Post tomorrow. mm-hmm. rumor has it. Of course, the most excitement that sort of was had on the internets today was Deathgasm was announced, finally coming to New Zealand as part of the festival. It's going to be intense. Anyone who hasn't heard of it, it was a huge South by Southwest hit about two metalheads who unleash a satanic riff that opens the gates of hell.
It sounds fantastic.
Kiwi, and it's also comedy, horror.
And it's it was the film that won the first Make My Horror Movie competition.
Yes, it did. It did indeed. One that I am, not that I can play favourites, one I'm personally a little bit excited about is Out of the Mist, an alternate history of New Zealand cinema, which may be one of the longest titles at NZIFF this year. Is an assembled and illustrated film essay by Tim Wong, who many of you may know from the Lumiere Reader.
And who's been a guest on the show when we talked about Studio Ghibli earlier on.
Yes, and so he sort of digs up well-known and slightly unknown New Zealand films and talks about them. Yeah,
very much looking forward to that. Clip essay is really appealing to me.
And we have a sequel as well, which is exciting, from Robin Greenberg, Return of the Free China Junk. Those who watched the Free China Junk that came to NZIFF a couple of years ago, I can't remember when it was, sorry, goes back to retell the story of the historic wooden Chinese sailing junk that crossed the Pacific in 1955. And they're trying to do a return journey after the family of its original sailors campaigned to save it from the scrap heap and bring it home.
What's interesting to me is that after last year and the huge rush of New Zealand feature films, fiction feature films, and everyone thinks, oh, we're turning a corner, this is great, New Zealand, you know, and there's only one in this year's festival. And I mean, I know that the festival can only program what's there. It's not like there's a whole lot of New Zealand feature dramas or comedies or what have you that they're turning down. But it just interests me how we can go from feast to famine so fast, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Well, I guess famine for drama, but I think for quality this year, the lineup of films is incredible. It's such a strong collection of films, and it's only going to get stronger, obviously. And also snuck in as well, Time Out, the Herald section, also had their exclusive announcement of Ex Machina, which is coming to New Zealand finally in the festival.
I've been talking about that, wanting to see that for ages. So
yes, yeah. Lots of people have. So it's very exciting that we will be getting that, and it's been hard to keep a secret. And we have a couple, I can't say anything quite yet, but we do have some more announcements coming up on Friday, which is tomorrow for us, but today for the listeners. So tune in to the website and social media.
Yeah, in fact, we'll probably be posting this after lunch, which means they'll already be out, I'd imagine. When you do it, you're mid-morning? So by the time you listen to this,
yes,
you'll already know.
Yes, hopefully, if everything goes right.
Yeah.
And then we also have an announcement on Saturday.
Oh, crikey.
It's like an avalanche of awesome right now. It's a lot to take in. Of course, in between our scheduling weeks, there was also another announcement, which I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But if you head to nzif.co.nz, select your region that you'll be going to the festival in, the films that are currently sort of semi-scheduled in your region will be there.
And if you haven't signed up for my festival, or, you know, my film festival, then you really should do that, because it does make planning your festival much, much easier.
Yes. And we also, for Wellington audiences, we are working on a few extra goodies for you this year in terms of wish lists and getting tickets and things. So that's going to be great. And ironing out a few, you know, some of the things that we've noticed along the way.
Something that
the website just keeps getting better, basically.
Something ticketing wise that the FIFA football people did, which I thought was really cool, was you had the ability to book a group, but you didn't have to pay for them all at once. So you could just, if you wanted to bring your mates, you could book 10 seats, and all your mates got an email saying, these
seats have been $10.
That these seats have been held for you. Pay for them now. So if I wanted to book them, I wouldn't have to buy all 10 at once. It meant we'd all be able to sit together.
Who's their ticketing person?
It's a ticket arrangement. Yeah.
Oh, Tick Attack. Yeah. Oh, Tick Attack. Aren't you clever?
Yeah. So yeah. So these sorts of things are out there in the world. And it would be, I mean, because I know that there's always a thing about festivals trying to gather groups and trying to coordinate people and get money in and all that sort of stuff so you can sit together. And it would be great if something like that was in the cards. But anyway, we'll...
I'll put it on the list for next year.
On the list.
If all else fails, just sit in the corner like I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or run up and down the stairs.
And just speaking of websites and ticketing, for those of you out there wondering what I do at NZIFF, I'm the online content coordinator. So I look after the website, make sure the films are okay and working and stuff like that. So if you have any questions, just ask me super nicely and I'll help you. If you get really aggro, I mean, I'll still help you, but I won't be
it's
as...
It's very early days for that, though, isn't it?
It
people
is.
You know, the
it
honeymoon. Is. We're still in the honeymoon period.
I know. We've been actually deploying so many updates to the website that people haven't even noticed, but I just know it's, like, super exciting.
So. All you have to do is be nice to the Usher Mafia, and we will look after you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a family.
Yeah.
It's a family.
Family. Okay, anyway, moving on. Now you know. The bosses at Cannes Film Festival sent a message last week that tweeting was ruining film criticism. Ugh. Thierry Frémaux and Pierre Lisieux, let's just go with that, said that instant Twitter reaction to films at the festival wasn't doing the films or the festival any good, which I'm sure any festival director would agree with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone is like, we're announcing this, and then someone tweets, it's shit. Like, it's, you know.
Yep.
You know, tone it down. Anyway. On the internet, an article is judged by the number of clicks. Civilization progresses, said Lazur sarcastically in an interview with Le Film Français, which is, coincidentally, a website. Keep those two-word reviews coming.
Yeah.
Whatever.
just don't tweet them until at least the lights have come up.
Yeah. And don't tweet during the movie, please.
Unless you're in the theatre on your own. If you're alone in the cinema... It's like being at home.
Yes. Or if you're at an event that is specifically for tweeting, like the New Zealand Ballet does. You know, it's a thing. In news that caught Dan's eye this week, Joseph Gordon-Levitt spoke to MTV at their Spike Awards about his forthcoming adaptation of Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic book series. Yes! And told the interviewer that character problems would not be solved by punching. In the comics... Morpheus doesn't punch anybody, he said.
See, I'm pleased that I'm not the only one that gets annoyed by this, you know. Tomorrowland should have been about characters using their brains to solve puzzles and to make things work, you know, and to creatively solve things. Instead, it just became about the fastest and the strongest and who had the biggest robots.
Aww.
Dumb.
And finally, in an industry shakeup, both Amazon and Netflix have stepped in where the big studios and indies fear to tread. Amazon has offered to fund Terry Gilliam's long-awaited, troubled, and often delayed feature film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. Gilliam has been trying to get this film made for donkey's years, and the documentary Lost in La Mancha was about his 2001 attempt to shoot the story with Johnny Depp and Jean Rochefort. At the same time, Brad Pitt's Plan B company has signed a deal with Netflix to produce War Machine, a satirical film about the war in Afghanistan. Pitt will star as General Stanley McChrystal.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. And, of course, Netflix and Amazon, they don't really have a stake in films going into cinemas. That doesn't really matter to them. Yet another, I worry whether cinemas are going to be where the most interesting films are going to appear. Anyway.
And I'd be interested, because I know we talked about this during the mailbag. People were getting two-word reviews from things people are watching on Netflix. I'd be really interested to know, with people in New Zealand who have New Zealand Netflix, what the streaming quality is like, and if you feel you're getting the full HD, or if you're having issues with the internet, because that's the whole thing.
And the selection as well. I mean, maybe we should do a special show about what
Netflix
people...
Netflix investigation.
Yeah, and the other options, what people are watching at home. We've got Neon, we've got... The Lightbox, you know, there's a whole lot, and Quickflix is still hanging on there. Are people making a choice on these matters? iTunes, you know, it's not subscriber streaming, but it's still, you know, it's still a great way to get material. No television on there yet for New Zealand.
So that's what we want to hear on Twitter this week. Let us know if you are out there doing these things. Please let us know. I'm sorry. I have no personal life right now. I don't know these things.
But you know, it's winter in New Zealand, and I know that for a lot of people, once you get home from work, you don't want to leave the house again. It's been pretty foul the weather in Wellington. You know, so it's like, oh, great. If we can stream almost any movie that we want legitimately, why leave the house, basically?
I'm waiting on Fatso to be a digital service. Seriously, that'd be amazing. I am considering signing up.
Yeah.
We do. I mean, we talk about Fatso on the show, I feel, all the time. They're great.
They're friends of ours. It's time now to pay a visit to...
warmer climates.
Some islands in the Pacific.
Well, I remember the good times.
There were no good times!
You can't let one small meltdown destroy me.
A second chance. Who doesn't want a second chance?
Your old boss wants you back. It's Hawaii, our old stomping ground.
Aloha. Gilchrist, you're back in the game.
I want to introduce you to your Air Force liaison. She's a fast burner.
A double espresso?
Morning, sir. I'm so jacked for today.
Make that a triple.
Aloha. This is Cameron Crowe's new film.
Is it?
Well, it's... And I just tried to describe it earlier on. It's like it's a romantic comedy. Is it? Like,
what's going on?
Yeah. So basically, we've got a story of another of Iraq war vet or an Afghanistan war vet, played by Bradley Cooper, who left the service under something of a cloud, has gone into private contracting, and it's kind of unclear what kind of contracting he was. He seems to be some kind of... secret agent at times. Some of the flashbacks make it seem like he's, you know, able to speak Pashtun to the Afghans and all the rest of it. But he's also this IT super spook geek person who can make all sorts of things. He can hack into... Anyway, he's also...
He can reverse hacking.
He can, yeah, that's right. Yeah. From the back room of a Chinese takeaway. Anyway... He goes to Hawaii, where he had once been stationed, and because he knows the people there, and his job is to sort of help smooth the path with the native Hawaiians in order to allow the US military base there to be expanded so that more rockets can be sent into space effectively. Why he has to do that as a private contractor becomes clear during the film, but he's given an Air Force liaison person played by Emma Stone. Emma Stone
is apparently a quarter Japanese.
See, we can talk a little bit about that. I had less of a problem with that than with the fact that none of it really made any sense.
Yeah, that was the least of its problems, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, Crowe has responded to the accusations of, you know, sort of... and I think this is a classic Twitter storm, isn't it? That whole people of colour portrayed by people of no colour. I mean, I think Emma Stone has none.
But to digress, the thing I found more troubling is the native Hawaiians were used almost as decoration in the film.
Yep.
It's like, okay, so you had some, like, weird casting with her, you know, but he sort of wrote it off because she's Swiss, so obviously all of her looks are Swiss and...
Swedish.
Swedish, yes. Mm.
Yeah, and she looked a lot more Swedish than she did Hawaiian or Asian, but, like... I think you could make a film about people who feel like they have a certain... you know, they're a quarter or a sixteenth or whatever of a particular particular ethnicity. They feel a great connection to it. They've been brought up in that environment, but they don't look, you know, like somebody could make a film in New Zealand about that very subject, and it would be a really interesting little investigation of those sorts of things, like how people look and how people feel are not necessarily... They don't necessarily have to be exactly the same thing. Hmm. The problem with this film is that it's not very good, isn't it? It's like, if it had been a smarter, more sensitive, better written film...
And more simple. There was so much going on. Like, it seemed like her... her obsession with like, oh, I'm Hawaiian, so I understand things, I know the spiritual side, and so they sort of wove in the spiritual side, then dropped it, and to me that was more interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Part of it.
There's also his ex-girlfriend, played by Rachel McAdams, lives with an Air Force pilot on the island, and sort of there's a rekindling of something going on there, which is essentially another narrative dead end, you know, like we go down it and nothing really happens. Emma Stone's character is really interesting. Like, she's obviously signed up for the military, and yet she seems to be kind of squeamish about putting weapons in space. I would have thought she would have been gung-ho about all of that. It's like, what, do you have a problem with shooting people, Emma? You've signed up for the Air Force. You're a fighter pilot.
I am a fighter pilot. That is what she said.
I'm a fighter pilot.
Fighter pilot.
I'm a fighter pilot.
So, you know, but oh no, some weapons, not keen on. Anyway, Bill Murray turns up and is Bill Murray for a while. Alec Baldwin turns up and is Alec Baldwin for a while. He's actually a highlight, a rare highlight in the film, although his entire scene is in the trailer, so.
His entire scene is in the trailer, and by the time he showed up to be comic relief, I was just so distressed by the whole thing and the people talking. Mm. That's right. I went to two films this week. People talking through the film.
Okay. What I think that both of you are not concentrating on is how awesome parts of the soundtrack were.
Yes.
Actually,
that's true.
The soundtrack was pretty awesome.
Are you talking about the Hawaiian soundtrack or the 80s pop soundtrack?
The 80s pop soundtrack, absolutely. And a highlight for me was the shoe in the Christmas tree. This will mean nothing to anybody that has not seen the film, but when you see it, you're like, oh, I get it. Hall & Oates, awesome.
Mm.
Yeah.
And of course, Cameron Crowe, you know, he started as a teen rock critic or rock writer for Rolling Stone, and so
that's his
history, yeah, and almost famous. It's his life story, and so
is it?
Yeah, it's like his autobiography.
More fun facts for Kelly Carruthers right here. Yeah,
I didn't call myself a film reviewer. Dan Seven did on Twitter, so there you go.
So, this is a film that just tries to cram so much in. You know what it felt like? It felt like somebody. Like, it's a first draft, and that somebody said, hey, Cameron, what have you got? We're ready to shoot something now. Something's, you know, we've got a gap in the schedule.
Or draft and an assembly cut. Like an assembly cut of a first draft.
Yeah, exactly. And it just needs so much more work to...
But there's a really solid short film in there. You know, it's like...
Well, I actually think there's probably a solid feature in there.
Yeah.
If they were clearer about whose story that they were following.
Do you think maybe that it's like it's Cameron Crowe and no one is saying no and he can just like do what he wants? Like,
no, I don't think so. I don't think it's that. I think that he, every time he makes a film, there's the sense that, and this is true of a lot of filmmakers, that you might never get another chance, you know? So when... So he's writing furiously. He's a little bit like Aaron Sorkin in that he likes to give all of his characters the same ability to just speak. You know, they all have the same articulacy. Mm. And so he's writing, and then maybe, you know, he's going into pitch meetings, he's trying to get stuff made, and somebody says, what have you got? And he says, well, I've got this thing set on Hawaii and Bradley Cooper is really interested in doing it. And it's like, boom, let's do it. And let's do it now. I'm not ready. Doesn't matter. There was a story in today's paper about Jurassic World where the director, Colin Trevorrow, was interviewed. And he said he was brought on to the production 3 months before they were due to start shooting and there was no script. That's what he says. It's like he's getting his excuses in now. You know, but that's the nature of these things is that the machine has to keep getting fed. And then I think in this case, Cameron Crowe has been chewed up and spat out. And I hope that it doesn't mean that he's toxic.
Wait, does that mean Jurassic Park, the new Jurassic Park, has been made because it's like a rights thing and they were worried they're going to lose the copyright?
Well, that's why they keep making Spider-Man. At Fox, because if they don't make a Spider-Man every 2 years or so, the rights go back to Marvel, and then Marvel sends them off to you know, to Disney, and boom, it's, and they, and then they can unite the universe and all that. Same with Fantastic Four. Got to keep making those, right? So, so there's an element of that. I wonder whether there was maybe. Actually, Karen and I were talking about this this morning, is that I wonder whether, you know, there was an option about to expire and, you know, a whole lot of money that had been spent trying to make a Jurassic Park movie was going to get written off. And, you know, it's just like, shit, we just got to get it out. Doesn't matter.
Most important question about Jurassic Park, though, will they revamp the ride at Universal Studios LA?
Well, I'm going to put you on that story. I'm going to assign you like Perry White, like J. Jonah Jameson. I'm going to assign you to that story, and don't come back until you've got an answer.
All right, LA, I'm coming.
Okay. Two words for aloha.
Hot mess.
Not awful.
Yeah, you didn't mind it, did you?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
The sort of thing that's in my mum to see and she'd enjoy it.
Wow. Mm. Okay. That's good. Well, it's good to know that there is...
Not saying that my mum has terrible taste. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, because she might be listening too.
That's true. I grew up in a family where if there was a bad review, I wasn't allowed to go to the movies. That simple. So, bad reviewers have ruined... I never saw Buffy the Vampire Slayer because of that. Dad wouldn't let me.
Oh.
Well, that's a conversation we're going to have to continue in the after dark at dinner. I'm trying to think of two words for aloha. Wasted opportunity would be my two.
That's really what I was going for. But.
Well, between us, we get there in the end, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this fortnight. Thanks for listening to this first episode of Season 3. We're going to be back with Episode 2 of Season 3 in... We're not going to wait a fortnight this time. We're going to do it in a week because of Rudy's schedule. So,
cool.
Yeah. Kaylee's looking at me going, "You didn't tell me that." With her eyes, she's saying, "What?" But no, we did talk about that. And so Rudy's going to be in town on Wednesday. We'll post that next week. I'm not sure how many films we'll get to talk about. It'll be a Mean Girls special. I should probably watch it this weekend so I can contribute to that conversation. If you've enjoyed this episode, if you're still listening to this episode, you can subscribe to us at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, where you'll find various ways to communicate with us, either email or you can make a comment on the website. People still do.
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter at Rancho Podcast. That's RANCHO Podcast, all one word, where we'll be tweeting incessantly about things we think are interesting. And you can interact with us on Letterboxd, thanks to the lovely Reese Pie. Our username is Rancho Notorious, all one word.
The show is a Funerals and Snakes Productions. Our executive producers are Robert Cato, Random Films, Claire Quiray, who we heard from earlier, Mark Cuby, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson, and Matthew Buchanan. The theme music is Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Los Plantronics, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to play you out with some more music, and talking of aloha and the soundtrack, this is not one of those 80s classic hits. Sorry, Rebecca. This is Hano Hano Hanale by Alfred Alahukia, which I thought was kind of charming. In fact, lots of the Hawaiian music is charming, but then I'm a sucker for ukuleles, sorry. Thanks to Rebecca for coming and helping us out. It's been a pleasure having you here.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Cool. Bravos to my partner Karen, who's waiting patiently with pizza outside, and hopefully there's still some left, actually. And it's her job to make sure that everyone who visits us here at Rancho Notorious is well fed, well watered, and well looked after, and they always
are. And she
are.
Gives great hugs.
Yeah.
She's
Once again,
just great.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Kaylee, and thanks to you all for listening. We're off for dinner now, so that's good evening from me, Dan Slevin.
And good night from me. Hello, I'm a little bit of 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 a little